Wisconsin's elections this week were officially nonpartisan. If you've been listening to WPR, you've heard about 5 trillion times. That means that candidates don't run under a party label, like Democrat or Republican or the rest. But you may have noticed subtle signs that there's some partisan political involvement, like massive donations or ad campaigns from the state Democratic and Republican parties and from major donors on the left and right, directly to candidates, to parties, or to outside groups that support candidates. A lot of that money went into the campaign for Supreme Court, but many school board races around the state saw endorsements, donations, and advertising from groups with partisan ties. So what's the deal with nonpartisan races in Wisconsin? Are they less nonpartisan than they used to be? Does it matter if they are? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the heavy political angle in the state Supreme Court race? Would you like to see political parties and big donors on the left and right stay out of those kind of races? And how about school board? Did you have a politically charged campaign in your district? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mordecai Lee has been watching Wisconsin politics for a few years now. He's an emeritus professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Mordecai, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Rob. Glad to be here.
Now, before we get into the nonpartisan part of this discussion, we were just talking on the show about the importance of that Supreme Court outcome. Just want to get your thoughts on that before we get into our main topic.
Well, I guess it's all about power. And up to now, power in the Supreme Court was sort of invisible because of the very topic that you introduced. That's that we elected Supreme Court justices on a nonpartisan basis. So it was harder for the voters to figure out who's the right-leaning candidate and who's the left-leaning candidate. And the breakthrough, whether it was a good precedent or a bad precedent in the race on Tuesday, was that we really easily could identify who was the left-leaning and who was the right-leaning candidate. I think there's a certain advantage to helping voters find the team that they want to vote for. I suppose the analogy would be, you know, what if at a Packer game at Lambeau Field, both teams wore the same uniform? How would we know who the Packers were and who the Bears were? So maybe the advantage of partisan elections versus nonpartisan elections is, I'm fill in the blank. I'm right-leaning. I'm conservative. Now I know who to vote for because that person is identified as Republican or, you know, on the other side. So maybe it is a service to the voters to do that. You'd have to go back to history. It's almost naive to think about the good government movement in Wisconsin about 100, 120 years ago under the La Follettes, where, you know, the theme was, let's take politics out of, and then fill in the blank, out of the spring elections, out of school board races, out of mayor's races, out of county board races. And the line they used to use in those days was, there isn't a Republican way to pick up garbage or a Democratic way to pick up garbage. There's only an efficient way to do it and a corrupt way to do it. And that really was the underlying logic of more than 100 years ago to have nonpartisan races.
Now, with a judge, say, in the Supreme Court, we could envision, and I think this is an ideal, the really impartial judge who takes the law and the precedent and the history and applies it to this issue without concern for the outcome and who it's going to make happy or make angry. Has that ever been the case? Is it naive to think that that could be a thing that we would want?
We were probably somewhat naive. Going back to when I started following Wisconsin politics in the 1960s, generally speaking, if you knew enough about the candidates and their backgrounds, you could sort of tell who was the de facto Republican and who was the de facto Democrat. But it was very, almost invisible. It was very hard to tell. I think the reason that a Supreme Court race is different from, let's say, a trial level court, circuit court, or the appeals level court, is that if you're a trial level judge or an appeals level judge, your job is to interpret the law and apply it as it's written. The famous line is, all you're doing is you're calling balls and strikes. Mm-hmm. You're not imposing your own personal views. Now, when it comes to the Supreme Court, they do get to impose their personal views because they're the ones who set precedent. They're the ones who interpret the law and decide what is the basis for making a decision. And that's where people started falling to the left or to the right. I think it was easier for us to see it on the U.S. Supreme Court when we knew that somebody who was nominated by a Democratic president was likely to be left of center, somebody named by a Republican president was likely to be right of center. And so we saw the Warren Court that sort of tipped to the left, and then we saw other courts that tipped to the right. And now it's really sort of infected Wisconsin Supreme Court politics, and even at lower levels. For those of your viewers who aren't in the Milwaukee area, we have had a Court of Appeals race, and the incumbent judge who had been named by Scott Walker was opposed by an opponent who sort of literally, almost literally said, he was named by Scott Walker, and I disagree with that. And she just killed him, almost a 2-to-1 vote, because in Milwaukee County, it's so Democratic dominated. So it's a trend. It's probably a bad trend, but it does help the voters in the long run.
I've been doing a mental exercise. Suppose somebody wanted to run for state Supreme Court as a moderate, as a down the middle, you know, old school, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to call balls and strikes. Who would they get money from? Like, where is there's not a motivated money group out there or donor or things like that that feels excited enough to give money to that versus, oh, somebody I agree with on my side, whether that's right or left. Is it impossible to have that kind of candidate be successful?
Oh, you've really hit the nail on the head, Rob. Just to play out your example, nobody would give to them except their relatives and their cousins and maybe their next door neighbors. And, you know, they'd have about $53 to spend versus the kind of millions that we saw. I suppose, based on what you just said, I think that's an argument for public financing of elections. Now, generally speaking, the taxpayers hate the idea that their tax dollars would go into politics. But if you think about it, what if the only way you could run for a state Supreme Court would be to be eligible for public financing of elections? You couldn't spend your own money. You couldn't spend anybody else's money. You were capped by the amount of money you got from the state. And your opponent was equally capped by the amount they got from the state. That would move us in the direction of what you described, but I'm afraid it's sort of a fantasy. It's never going to happen.
We're talking about nonpartisan elections in Wisconsin, like the ones we just had, and why there seems to be a lot of partisan involvement in them these days. Issues, money, especially from state Supreme Court down to your local school board. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. David is with us in Delavan. David, hi.
I got to grab this. Hello, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, David?
What I wanted to bring up basically is how this is, you know, this Supreme Court justice being elected is celebrated as this, you know, it's going to obviously overturn the abortion ban. And there, you know, this is a celebration of women's rights. I, for one, am pro-choice. I see this as a dark day in Wisconsin.
Did you mean to say pro-life? If you think it's a dark day, you said pro-choice, but I think you might have meant pro-life.
I'm pro-life.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, pro-life. And I don't know. I think, you know, so we just went through this season, Black Lives Matter, what happened in Kenosha and all this kind of stuff. Well, Planned Parenthood was founded by Margaret Thatcher, who, of course, was a racist person. And there is genocide that is taking place, you know, today, basically at the hands of these abortion clinics, with the vast number of aborted babies are African-American.
David, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Mordecai, David, obviously not happy with the outcome. Margaret Sanger, I think David meant. But I want to take that to Janet Protasiewicz. Went closer to the line, it seems like, in expressing her views on the issue that David raises, abortion, than we usually see, at least publicly, in these Supreme Court races.
There's no doubt that she was much more explicit about the position she took on some very hot issues, including, and in particular, abortion. But I'd like to suggest that in the previous races, some of the candidates had inched closer to the line, never as close as Protasiewicz did. But, you know, they would hint, well, I'm generally conservative or I'm generally progressive. And they would sort of leave little hints and innuendos that people could interpret who was the conservative candidate and who was the liberal candidate. So she made it much more explicit, but I think we've really had that same thing to a lighter degree in Wisconsin Supreme Court races for at least 20 years.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker, looking at nonpartisan elections in Wisconsin, like the one we just had, why they feel pretty partisan these days. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Talked a lot about the state Supreme Court. We're also going to get into school boards and want to hear a report from your part of the state. If you saw heated political school board elections where it seemed like, even though they didn't have D's and R's by their name, there were Democratic and Republican candidates. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, longtime observer of Wisconsin politics. We're talking about officially nonpartisan races in Wisconsin elections. We've been talking about the state Supreme Court, but there's also school boards and local government and why there's so much partisan involvement in them. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So school boards, especially in rural districts, it's hard to get people to even run for a school board. And if you bring partisanship into it, it makes it even more difficult. In a small little burb of Lodi, the Columbia County Democrats decided to get involved in the election, basically endorsed two candidates, provided help for them. They had meetings inviting these candidates to them to provide support. They kicked out members of the public who were not Democrats. Do we really want this at a school board level where all kids should feel welcome? And is that a way to get more funding to schools when referendums are needed to have that much division? Doesn't make sense to me.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Lodi not alone. Mordecai, we saw lots of political involvement from the Democratic Party, in some cases Republican Party, and highly funded outside groups. What are you looking at there?
You know, I think something has changed. It's almost like the old model of nonpartisan school board races just absolutely cracked during COVID. In other words, up to COVID, there was sort of this general mainstream feeling that there was something called a good education, a quality education versus a lousy education or a bad school board or a micromanaging school board. And that Democrats, people who are generally Democrats and generally Republicans, just did not focus on any partisan issues. They focused on people they thought were competent and qualified and hardworking, just exactly the way Steve was describing the old model. But then all of a sudden comes along COVID, and should the school close or not close? If it's open, should they have to wear masks or not have to wear masks? And it was like from zero to 100, it's almost like it happened overnight, that school boards got just totally swamped by parents and citizens on both sides of those issues. And suddenly school board meetings seemed like, I don't know, a state legislative meeting, you know, where people yelling and screaming at each other. And the poor school board members were just sort of hit by this tsunami of opinion. I don't know how to get back to where we were. And Steve is right. We want, these are thankless jobs. You spend night after night in meetings and reading documents in advance and making judgments if the superintendent is doing a good job or a bad job, if you need to increase taxes or not. Those are tough issues without partisanship. I'm just not sure how to get back to the good old days.
Steve, thanks for the call. And Mordecai, I've been wondering, we hear a lot about local issues being overwhelmed by national issues. We're all voting based on what we're hearing in national news and national websites. There's less local media to follow those local issues. Is that part of what's driving this? We're picking our side in national politics and writing that onto the school board level?
Well, there's no doubt that over the last 10 or 15 years that local news media, mainstream news media at the local level, you know, the local daily, the local weekly, the local radio station with a news staff, that all that has gradually faded under the pressure of financial success or bankruptcy. And so I think you're right, Rob, to hint that maybe it's been replaced by sort of national news. And both parties have really succeeded in identifying issues that can be transplanted from one state to another. For example, I think the Republicans have been very successful at creating issues such as parental rights or criticizing issues of trans students. Whether one agrees with what comes out of this right-leaning ideology or not, it's very successfully transported across municipal lines, across state lines, because an issue of, let's say, parental rights or trans rights or teaching about slavery or not teaching about slavery, those are applicable throughout the country.
Talking to Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, looking at nonpartisan elections in Wisconsin where candidates don't run as a Republican or Democrat, say, and this goes from state Supreme Court to the school boards we've been talking about, and why there's a lot of partisan angles to them these days. I've got more callers looking at the judicial elections here. Let's go back to our callers with Cindy in Green Bay. Cindy, hi.
Hi. I would just like to say that, you know, I think everybody's partisan, but when it comes to a judge or a school board member, we should be able to expect that they are big enough to set that partisanship aside and, as far as judges go, do what's right by the law. As far as school board goes, do what's right for the children and the school and not their party. And that's part of the problem. But I think it stems from the top. And we've seen it now with the Supreme Court. They're making it partisan. It's transferring down everywhere. I just think that's how it's going to be from now on until maybe we as the people say enough is enough.
Cindy, thanks a lot for that call. She phrased that in an interesting way, Mordecai, the idea that, okay, yeah, maybe they do have a partisan lean, but when they take that position as a judge or a school board member, you know, they might lean in a certain direction, but they will be able to evaluate the law or the facts facing a school board in an objective way. I mean, that doesn't seem impossible, does it?
You know, Rob, maybe the best example is when the state Supreme Court had to make a decision about drop boxes, whether it was legal under state law for municipalities to put out drop boxes, you know, with all the security, 24-hour cameras and all that, whether it was permitted under the law. And there were two ways to interpret the silence of the law. There was nothing in the state laws that either banned drop boxes or permitted drop boxes. So the state Supreme Court justices really had to make a kind of ideological decision. A conservative approach was, if it's not explicitly permitted by the law, then it's not permitted. Whereas the sort of the right-leaning liberal justices could lean in the other direction. If it's not prohibited by state law, then it's permitted. How do you break that deadlock? How do you bring a decision that that somehow transcends those perceptions of how to make a decision? So I think it went in one direction, and maybe under a new justice, it'll go in exactly the opposite direction.
Thanks for that call, Cindy. Now, a cynical observer, Mordecai, would hear your story and say, yeah, that wasn't a reflection of their judicial thoughts on the presence or absence of a law. It was their thoughts on an outcome. One Dropbox outcome might benefit Republicans more than Democrats. The other one, the other way around. Is that fair?
You know, I think, Rob, the reason why that might be an applicable example as a predictable decision by the conservative and liberal justices is that the 4-3 vote by the conservative majority, with the exceptions of just a few cases by one Justice Hagedorn, have become so routine and so predictable and so by rote that we can only interpret that as meaning that they have a very set political ideology. And in a sense, the facts be darned, they're going to do what their partisan oriented thinking would go. And so it's 4-3, 4-3, 4-3. And now after August 1st, when she takes office, it's going to be 3-4, 3-4, 3-4. So the majority may have flipped, but the underlying predictability, I fear, has not.
Some states, have elections for state Supreme Court justices that are not nonpartisan. You run as a Republican or a Democrat for the court, or you go, I think there's one state where you go from a Republican primary, a Democratic primary, and then magically become nonpartisan. But would it be, I don't know, more honest? Would it make sense, do you think, Mordecai, for Wisconsin to switch that system? You're an R, you're a D, you're running against each other.
You know, given these partisan times, I think maybe we should junk nonpartisan elections. Maybe we may as well do what the de facto election on Tuesday was, and that's that it was a partisan election, liberals versus conservatives. And, you know, maybe just one quick historical example. The first time that in Milwaukee, about 100 years ago, they elected a socialist mayor, it was because mayors in Milwaukee at the time were elected on a partisan basis. And the Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature didn't like that. So they united to make mayoral races nonpartisan so that it'd be harder for the voters to figure out who was the socialist. And so there was an example of sort of the major two parties thinking they would benefit by having nonpartisan elections instead of partisan ones. So it can go in either direction based on the historical momentum.
Mordecai, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker. He joined us for a look at partisan politics in Wisconsin's officially nonpartisan election races, like the ones we voted in earlier this week.